we have to be very, very careful. What we're talking is not so much democracy, we're talking organised hypocrisy. Hard facts.
Well, I think James Connolly said it best when he said that their crimes would shame all the devils in hell. And just as the crimes of imperialism were legion in his day, they are legion in our day. Imperialism has run like a broken thread throughout human history, but so has resistance to imperialism. And in this regard, I'd like to take a moment to pay tribute to the Syrian Arab Army, Hezbollah, Iran, Russia, in short, all those whose efforts in combating this genocidal project of a latter-day Khmer Rouge has prevented Syria from being pushed into an abyss in which its minorities, people who can trace their presence in that part of the world back over a millennia and more, would have been gone, extirpated, annihilated. I'd like to take a moment to pay tribute to the people of Palestine, in particular 16-year-old Ahed Tamimi, one feminist icon that you won't see being celebrated in the pages of The Guardian anytime soon, or in CNN or the BBC, or at the Golden Globes. I'd like to pay tribute to the Cuban people, the Venezuelan people, in short, all peoples who are currently existing in the crosshairs of imperialism.
I echo my comrade John White's comments. We live in an era where we're supposed to hate Russia. We're encouraged at every turn to hate and fear Russia. Paradoxically, we're asked to love Germany, hate Russia. Well, I will never, ever hate Russia or remain silent while others generate hate against her. We owe a great debt of gratitude to the Russian people.
If we're not going to take a line now with the threat of possible confrontation with Russia, possible with Iran, this is where we're heading. We can see it quite clearly. Until we move, until we tackle this neoconservative influence in our policies, then I'm afraid there's only more problems that lie ahead. So we have to take this head on. And hopefully events like this, which Gregory has put on, will, I think, the more people who come to these events, we share them, we tweet about them, we publicise them. We've got alternative media now, which is wonderful. We've got social media. We have really got to get the message out now to people. And particularly important, I think, is this within the Labour Party now, which could be the next, could be the government this time next year. We really have to make our voices very, very loud on this issue. No more wars, no more illegal interventions, no more targeting of these countries. And let's have a world of genuine peace, solidarity and internationalism.
Back in January of this year, 2018, I was privileged to speak at an event in Derry, Ireland called Imperialism on Trial. You've just been listening to excerpts from some of the speeches. It was a wonderful event organised by Greg Sharkey, a native of Derry, which for those who don't know is a town whose history is bound up with the history of colonialism and imperialism, British colonialism and imperialism, that is, as few are. And so successful was this Imperialism on Trial event in Derry that it's been decided to take it on tour around the UK, where those fortunate enough to attend will be treated to the likes of George Galloway, Eva Bartlett, Peter Kuznick, Neil Clark and Peter Ford in providing the kind of analyses which only they can. The tour kicks off in London on July the 11th, then moves to Birmingham July 12th before hitting Liverpool on July 15th and wrapping up in Manchester on July 16th. Further details, along with a full list of speakers, can be found at the Imperialism on Trial Facebook page. And for those who are able and who are interested in a serious and penetrating discussion of events taking place in Syria, North Korea, Venezuela, etc., on arriving at an understanding of the role of the mainstream media in shaping the official narrative and mass consciousness, and doing so in a way that joins the dots, well, I seriously suggest that obtaining a ticket and attending one or more of those aforementioned dates is non-negotiable. Imperialism, in its broadest sense, is the ideology of domination, and it is this ideology and the crimes that have and continue to flow from it that make it the single greatest threat to humanity and the planet. 800 US military bases in over 70 countries around the world tell their own story. I mean, does anybody really believe that those bases exist to make the world safe for democracy, as the proponents of this state of affairs claim? Because I have to tell you, if you believe that, you really will believe anything. In truth, those bases exist to make the world safe for US and Western corporations to exploit the world's human and natural resources unmolested and unchallenged. They exist not as a shield, but as a sword, part of an apparatus of domination and hegemony which functions not only on a military level, but also on an economic, cultural, and geopolitical level. Therefore, a key task for those who are serious in making sense of what may appear to be a world of multiple disconnected crises in which Washington and its allies are the perennial good guys, while those on the other side of the metaphorical Hadrian's Wall are the barbarians, is to break free of the false consciousness by which acceptance of and acquiescence in this grievous distortion of reality is achieved. Because the reality is that we, i.e. the West, are the barbarians in this scenario, responsible for unending suffering, despair, carnage, and chaos in the name of what they call democracy, but which in fact is imperialism. And to this imperialist hegemonic juggernaut emanating from Washington does not change character according to the occupant of the White House. To claim that it does is as absurd as claiming that the character of a crocodile is determined by the colour of its eyes. Syria, Libya, Iraq, Afghanistan, North Korea, Venezuela, Iran. Those countries all currently exist in the crosshairs of imperialism, with their internal development inextricably linked to the huge external pressure exerted against them in the name as a consequence. Therefore, berating the leaders or governments of said countries over their lack of democracy, human rights, corruption, governance, and so on, is akin to berating a man for not breathing properly while you have your hand around his neck. That US and Western imperialism, in applying an asphyxiating grip on those countries which dare refuse to bow to its writ, is the real tyrant and impediment to freedom and human progress in our world. This is a truth that dare not speak its name. 'Twas ever thus, and ever thus shall be. I'm John White, and this is Hard Facts. Well, I'm delighted to be joined by our old friend, former UK ambassador to Bahrain and Syria, Peter Ford, who will be appearing during the Imperialism on Trial tour in the UK. Peter, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John. Pleasure.
Now, I don't know about you, Peter, but the word that springs to my mind whenever I think of this issue, when I think of imperialism, when I think of the need to combat and resist it, certainly as far as we are concerned on the level of ideas, that word is demystification. It's demystifying that which has long existed under the cloak of mystification, designed to conceal the reality of how it works, what its function is, and what its objectives are. Do you agree with me on that, Peter?
I totally agree, John. People could be forgiven for thinking that imperialism died when we gave up our last colonies. Far from it. Imperialism continues, but it uses other guises and masks. One of these masks, we call it protecting our allies, That's one of the justifications for what we're doing with Iran. We're alleged to threaten our ally, Saudi Arabia. So we're seeking confrontation with Iran. Another mask is defending democracy, supporting human rights. This, again, is brought forward as a justification for what we're doing in Syria, when the reality is that we are just exercising military might. And John, you mentioned a moment ago those 800 American bases around the world. Well, the number's growing. In Syria, several new bases have started up just in the last 2 years. There's one in the news at the moment at a very remote desert location called Al-Tanf, on the southern border of Syria with Iraq. And it was allegedly in defense of this base that our own dear RAF attacked, bombed, and killed Syrian soldiers only a couple of weeks ago. And this was made public via the government, the British government's friends, the Sunday Times, just at the weekend. Now, this is an act of war. And why did we do it? Well, allegedly because the Syrian forces were having the temerity to try...
Peter,
to...
I'm going to quickly come in here because the salient term they used there was an act of war. Yet judging by the mainstream liberal media in the UK, The Guardian, the BBC and so forth, it's an act of normal. This is the new normal, that we have the right to go into countries and bomb on any spurious justification or reason given by the government. Unquestioningly, in the pages of the mainstream media, they just repeat that mantra. They support, they've signed up to this doctrine. And so for us in this country and culture, it's become an act of normal. And this is the problem, isn't it? The fact that there is no one in the mainstream questioning this paradigm.
Yeah. We're being brainwashed. We're being conditioned into accepting this new normal, as you rightly call it. And this Al-Tanf incident was the second attack on illegal attack on Syria in 3 months. There was the April attack alleged over an alleged chemical incident. But Al-Tanf is particularly worthy of condemnation because the justification wasn't chemical weapons or anything. No, it was just that Syrian forces were brave enough to approach where the American British base is. This is a base where we are training jihadis to fight ISIS, but in reality to get in the way of the Syrian Arab army. And they killed brave Syrian soldiers. I think it's a stain on the reputation of the RAF. Our political leaders are bringing the RAF, a revered institution, into disrepute. Of course, there's a long history of this going back to the 1920s when the RAF happily bombed natives, as they called them then, in Iraq. But that's no excuse for repeating the same thing in Syria.
Talking about Syria, Peter, I have long held the belief that this conflict has been erroneously described as a civil war, erroneously described as even a regional war, although there are certain elements of both involved. But most importantly, this is an anti-imperialist struggle on the part of the Syrian government and its allies, and specifically the Syrian Arab Army, the non-sectarian Syrian conscript army, whose soldiers are drawn from every part of the multicultural and multi-religious mosaic that is Syrian society. And this is a problem, again, going back to my use of the word demystification, because I don't know about you, but I think the attempt to sow confusion in the minds of the public as to what's going on in Syria and other places around the world, and we'll get onto those perhaps, is a key part of their strategy, so that they manage to win the passivity or the acquiescence, if not the fulsome support, of the governments involved, US and the UK prominently, in these military adventures, so that the public at large doesn't really understand the real implications of what's going on and the real objectives of their governments, because I'm sure if they did and were to, they would be up in arms.
That's right. One of the subterfuges used by our government is to claim a right to protect. This is the buzzword in the humanitarian community, going back to Serbia, Kosovo, and all that. An alleged right to protect, which is used by the Western powers as a license to kill.
A license to kill, Peter. Let's hold that thought for the other side of the break. You're listening to Peter Ford. This is Hard Facts, and we'll be right back.
Hard Facts.
Welcome back to the second half of Hard Facts. I'm sitting down with estimable Peter Ford, former UK ambassador to Bahrain and to Syria, and we are discussing imperialism in the context of the Imperialism on Trial UK tour, which kicks off in London on the 11th of July and ends in Manchester on the 16th of July. And sorry, Peter, I had to interrupt you there. You were discussing the right to protect doctrine and how that's being used as justification for what is naked aggression on the part of the Western countries.
The government legal advice, which was published following the Duma incident to justify the bombing, this legal advice cited a right to protect. Now, reputable international lawyers deny that any such right exists. But if states like our own go on using it, they're hoping this will establish what the lawyers call a customary law. That is, get used to it. We're doing it so often that it's become part of customary law. That is the way our government are headed. But let me ask this. Why don't they cite a right to protect Gazans when Gazans are being massacred on no pretext at all by the Israelis, except that they are having the temerity to approach Israeli soldiers? Why don't we cite a right to protect Yemenis? Oh, no, because that would be going against our dear allies. The hypocrisy stinks, frankly.
It is hypocrisy, Peter. And here we get to a key component that's required in order for imperialism to function, whether it's in the context of the Roman Empire, the Greek Empire before it, the French Empire, British and so forth. And that is racism. Because in order to justify the colonization, the domination, the exploitation of entire peoples, there must be a process undergone whereby their humanity is diminished. They are dehumanized, they are demonized, painted as barbarians, painted as being a product of inferior cultures, religious beliefs, practices, traditions, and so on. And I was reminded of this, Peter, during the press conference at which Donald Trump was explaining the success, as he proclaimed, of his summit with Kim Jong-un regarding peace on the Korean Peninsula. And one of the CNN journalists present had the temerity to ask, and it was a very, very much one of those revelatory moments where the ideas of the ruling class are revealed without embroidering them with the buzzwords of democracy and human rights as we are used to. This journalist said to Donald Trump, "So, Mr. Trump, do you believe that Kim Jong-un is your equal? Did you treat him as your equal?" And I was astounded at the implications of that question, Peter. Because whether this journalist was conscious of it or unconscious of it, that comment was dripping in racism, that the North Koreans are somehow lesser people, their leaders are lesser people of a lesser culture. Now, you've been at the heart of the establishment. There's nothing more establishment than a UK ambassador. Tell me, how does this work, you know, in the context of diplomacy, in terms of working as an ambassador in one of those far-flung countries that are deemed by the British establishment and the Western establishment as being of lesser importance than we are?
You're absolutely right. And it took me many years before I came to this conclusion, but eventually I came to the same conclusion that in the last analysis, the absolutely final analysis, the root of our foreign policy is that we despise brown people. That is the root of it. And you have only to listen and watch someone like Boris Johnson. Let's not even mention the Americans, but people like Boris Johnson to understand this. He used disparaging language about Africans. Some of his Tory colleagues talk about bongo land. This is what it's about in the last analysis. And these people, in their better moments, think that they're carrying the white man's burden. That is the new humanitarianism, that we know best what's good for the brown people, and we're jolly well going to make sure they accept it, whether they want it or not. And Boris Johnson follows in that tradition, as do the liberal interventionists, the Guardianistas, the David Milibands, the Obamas, even. As you mentioned at the beginning, it makes no difference which American president is in power. There is a permanent security state which is fundamentally racist as well as militarist.
Now, you heard an excerpt from my speech at the Imperialism on Trial event at the start of the show. Just as imperialism has run like an unbroken thread throughout human history, so has resistance to imperialism. And in order to resist imperialism, you have to obtain or achieve or cultivate a level of consciousness. You have to break free from the false consciousness of the received truths which are inculcated from birth about the undying and enduring goodness of the West, the moral righteousness, the moral rectitude of Western governments, the unfailing virtue of Western liberal democracy, our economic system, and so on and so on. And it strikes me, I'm always fascinated by a man who was born in my city of Edinburgh, Peter James Connolly. He was born this year 150 years ago. He was executed just over 100 years ago by the British for his part in the 1916 Easter Rising in Dublin, executed by the British while tied to a chair because he was wounded in the Kilmainham jail in Dublin. And it's interesting how this man died with probably hardly a penny in his pocket. And yet, we still talk about this man. He's still revered. He's still remembered. His legacy has lived on. And I think it will live on for many, many, many generations to come, perhaps for all eternity, as long as the oppression that issues from imperialism continues to function. Yet the people of his day, the well-remunerated journalists, the pro-war scribes, Connolly memorably described them as the ink slingers of the jingle press. Nobody remembers those individuals from that time. And isn't it interesting that those who go along to get along, who serve the machine, are never remembered, while those who have the courage and the will and the principle to stand up and try and resist the machine are remembered and revered. That shows you what is required in terms of achieving human progress. And here we come to the mainstream media. Give us your quick analysis, Peter, on how the mainstream media functions as an auxiliary of imperialism in our time.
Well, I'll just give you one very concrete example. A few weeks ago, the BBC Today presenter Justin Webb was interviewing Baroness Cox, a campaigner on Syria, member of the House of Lords, upright, a very Christian lady. She came back from Syria, where she had talked to many political and religious leaders, including the Grand Mufti of Syria. Well, Justin Webb, his voice dripping with sarcasm and mockery, asked her, "How could you sit down and have tea with a man who had signed the death warrant of thousands of innocent Syrians? How could you?" And the truth here is that the allegation that the Mufti signed death warrants was made in an Amnesty International report on the basis of testimony from a single individual working for the Syrian opposition. And it was a simple untruth, a total fabrication. And yet here you have one of the top presenters on one of the top programs on the BBC using this fake news to berate someone who questioned the government's narrative on Syria. That was so typical, so emblematic of everything that is wrong about the mainstream media coverage of issues of national security.
And tell me, someone like yourself, who's been a very prominent voice in opposition to the state of affairs, you've appeared, you don't only appear on small shows like this one, you've appeared in the BBC, in mainstream media, and every time you do appear, it's a sensation, and I think you give them words of truth, which clearly these presenters are unable to deal with. You see their faces just turning all colours of the rainbow as you speak and refute the assumptions implied in their questions, which are usually a set of rhetorical questions regarding what's going on in Syria and who's responsible and so on. Give us an idea of the kind of attacks that you've suffered and endured, because I know that others who have occupied a similar position to you have undergone this kind of demonization in the mainstream press for daring to diverge from these received truths.
Absolutely. I've been attacked notably by the Daily Telegraph, which ran a story saying that, headlined that I had a job with Assad's father-in-law. And this was based on, it's a typical factoid. A factoid is a fact that, or an allegation that has a little grain of truth, but it's totally skewed. And the little grain of truth here is that on a pro bono basis, I'm not paid one penny. I do help to direct the British Syrian Society, which occasionally organizes seminars in and workshops about reform in Syria itself. We do. We have no activities in the UK. But this work was presented by the Daily Telegraph, and they had to recant on it, presented as me having a job and being on the payroll of Syria. In a way, I can understand it, because every other speaker on Syria on the other side is on the payroll. There are, when you think about it, you can't think of a single individual that they bring out to talk about Syria, whether they're commentators or government spokesmen or think tanks, who are not on somebody's payroll. Well, this is my unique selling point. I am not on anybody's payroll. And that, I think, entitles me to a little bit of respect, or at least accuracy with reporting about me.
Well, I can tell you this, Peter Ford, you're certainly respected on this show, and I'm sure respected in many other places too. You've been listening to Peter Ford. I'm John White. Until next time, remember, the only facts worth taking seriously are hard facts.